John Boy.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome to another episode of Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not a document, a documentary, a report, a news situation, any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any kind is worth your time and energy. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PacSync through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us at www.freedomtrainradio.com or Stitcher, iTunes, or Google Play. Be sure to head to one of those places and give us a review. Be sure to head to freedomtrainradio.com to interact with us, comment on the shows. And then be sure to head to our sponsors page, www.pactsinc.org, pactsinc.org. Show some love and support for our sponsors. PacSync is a black activist and advocacy organization focused on developing the black community through a shifting culture, education, and economics. And as always, Lessons from the Screen has a frame of reference that is aligned with that of the black community. So the things that we look at will be looked at with the racial component involved and with some lessons that can be used to help us improve our community. During this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be looking at the looming water crisis in South Africa. We will also be digging a little bit into the water shortages across the continent and, of course, things that we can learn from these situations. In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be looking at water and Africa. Now, Cape Town has been in the news for the last couple of months as its water reserves drop past the level of alarm and into the level of, oh shit, we finna be thirsty. The entire region of the continent is in the middle of a three-year drought, but Cape Town is getting a lot of attention because it's a sprawling metropolis of roughly 4 million people. It's a huge tourist attraction in the middle of South Africa. And the nation has held the world's attention since the end of apartheid in the early 90s, Nelson Mandela. The city finds itself in a similar position as California's five-year drought that ended last March, except unlike California, Cape Town doesn't have the infrastructure to last 5 years. With that said, they are predicting that in around May of this year, the city will turn off the taps to most of the residents in the city. They took steps to reduce usage, and when most of the city's residents didn't comply, they were forced to reduce them again. And they still didn't comply. And even now, with the restrictions placed at a level of 13 gallons per day per person, which is really only about enough for a 90-second shower, one flush of the toilet, one cooked meal, two hand washes, about a half gallon to a gallon of drinking water, with a spit left over for washing dishes, some of the wealthier people are still willing to just pay the fines in order to keep the lifestyles that they're accustomed to. Many have taken to blaming the community outlets, which service more than 1 million people who don't have access to water in their homes or anywhere else. But government officials and university researchers have said that even with all of the leaks and the constant dripping of those fountains, those lines only account for about 4.5% of the total water usage, largely meaning it ain't the poor people who seem to always be getting blamed for stuff like this. It's the middle class and the rich people as they continue to fill their swimming pools and water their lawns. Because, you know, even though your neighbor, well, the person across the town is starving or thirsty, dehydrated, you still got to make sure that you keep your lawn green, right? The search for water has already begun, with many people taking to lines at 3 and 4 in the morning to wait for hours to get water from public parks, various other places, or hoping that a grocery store received the overnight shipment. The city plans to invest in water infrastructure and various desalinization plants, things that the city had been told it needed to do by several experts for years past, but they just kept putting it off. And now we find a situation where people are going to be forced to get their water rations from water designation points under armed guard unless Mother Nature decides to let her rains fall, something that climate scientists say she is less inclined to do because of man-made global warming. And it is important to state at this point that if it gets to the point where they're issuing out rations and they've turned off the tap, they're only going to get rationed 6.6 gallons a day instead of the 13 that they're getting now, or the 23 that they were allotted before that. And it also should be mentioned that even the 13 gallons that they're allotted now is underneath the recommended levels by the World Health Organization. So this water issue is bigger than Cape Town. All of South Africa is having issues with water. All of Africa is, really. It is a continent, however, that doesn't suffer from a lack of physical water. Of course, there are some areas on the continent that suffer from a lack of physical water. But on the whole, the majority of the continent has access to physical water. It suffers from something called economic scarcity. Water economic scarcity. Meaning that it is too expensive to find, relocate, or develop safe, clean water. Thus, many people are forced to spend upwards of 4 to 5 hours a day transporting water. Now, you think about what that means. That means that there's less time for education for kids. There's less time for adults to work. There's less time for innovation. All the things that require time to sit down or to do something other than walk to a watering hole and fill up a large sack, jerry can, or whatever of water and walk back to your house, there isn't time for. The economic impact of these situations are dramatic, as areas with no access to safe, clean, nearby water are almost always locked into a position of poverty. And this is for the very same reasons that we mentioned earlier. The simple fact is, when you have to spend a significant portion of your waking hours traveling to go get a necessary resource for your survival, you have less time available to spend on things like educational development, economic development, innovative upliftment projects and things of that nature, cultural development. You have less time to do those things because so much of your time is spent surviving. And when you're having to walk 4 or 5 hours a day to get water, look, most people are only up 12 to 16 hours a day. If you're spending a third of that time walking to get water, that dramatically impacts what you can get done in your day, especially when you consider the fact that you have to recuperate after a walk like that. Especially carrying around 40 to 80 pound sack of water the entire time. So, and then not to mention the fact that you could very well be dehydrated during this whole process. So this is significant. This water issue is very, very, very significant. And it is something that affects the economics of the situation. You look at Cape Town, if people are having to spend hours waiting on their water rations, they're not going to be able to work. A lot of the agricultural plants, a lot of the agricultural industries aren't going to be able to produce the proper yields of crops in order to sustain their businesses, which means more people get laid off, which also, because this is agriculture, means that people aren't going to have the food to eat. So now not only are they not working, they don't have any money, but they don't have any food, even if they do have money, which puts a strain on the national economy. All of this thing, like, water is a key ingredient to modern civilization. And if you remove water from the equation, you pretty much wipe humans off of the face of the earth, right along with life, period. So another interesting point here is that Africa is the only continent suffering from the problem of economic scarcity en masse. If you look at a picture of water economic scarcity, it doesn't exist in the large sections anywhere but in Africa. Anywhere but in Africa. Now, we could go all day into a bunch of the different reasons for why we think that is, why we feel that is, theories and things of that nature, but that doesn't change the fact that it is what it is. The southern tip is near physical scarcity at this point, which is the situation we now see ourselves facing in South Africa. The northern tip is the Sahara Desert. It's a desert, which means there's no water. And then the entire middle, with the exception of a small gap in between the Sahara Desert and the upper middle portion of it where there isn't any data available, but the entire middle is facing this problem of economic scarcity. And a landmass the size of the United States is facing economic scarcity of water. Almost a billion people in Africa face a problem with getting safe, clean water. That is a real problem. A real problem, especially when you see people taking advantage of the situation economically, monetarily, financially, making gains off of other people's suffering, charging people for water, locking them out of water when they don't have access to it, homes burning down, people being burned alive in various other situations because they couldn't get access to water to put a fire out. So this is very serious, and Africa is facing this problem far and above worse than anybody else, which is interesting again. And again, we can have a bunch of different shows for why that is, but it doesn't change the fact that it is, in fact, what it is. Which all of this brings us to another point. The climate in Africa is undergoing another one of those rapid shifts that seems to overtake the continent roughly every 5,000 years or so. The last time it happened, the Sahara Desert went from being a lush area of greenery to a desert in a matter of a few hundred generations. And some of you might be thinking, or a few hundred years, I'm sorry, not generations. Some of you might be thinking that, well, few hundred years is a long time. No, it's really not. Not in geological time. That is the blink of an eye. That is your grandparent, your great-grandparents passing down a trick or a tactic or a skill set of growing a certain type of plant. Your great-grandfather passing that skill set down, and by the time it gets to you, it's utterly useless. That's what that is. That is rapid development, especially in an area and in a place where technology isn't necessarily where it should be or where it could be. Let me say, not should be, where it could be in order to foster generational changes and skill sets on a quick enough basis to account for such a drastic and rapid change. And you add to that that people simply don't expect their environment to change that rapidly. We don't. So these shifts, and again, the last one occurred roughly 5,000 years ago, you could imagine how quickly that must have been for them. And now we're in the middle of another rapid climate shift, what looks to be a rapid, and I'm not a climatologist or a geologist or anything like that, but this is what looks to be, to me, another rapid climate shift. And you know, there are some experts that back me up. I do want to say that. So that's something else that we have to take into account when we get into this. And climate is always something that we have to take into account whenever we're dealing with things like water, weather, or scarcity. So the climate shift combined with poor management, poor infrastructure, and a wealthy population that cares more about keeping their pools filled than their lawns green, than those that can't afford to pay the fine. And you have a situation where women are hanging their wash dishes outside of their windows to be rinsed by someone in the floor above theirs, throwing dirty water out of their window. That is a drastic, drastic situation. Now, again, this show, there are a bunch of different angles you could take it. There are a bunch of different things you could pull out of this show. You could look at it from the equality angle, the economics angle, the social angle, the racism angle. There are a bunch of different angles, but I'm really only going to focus on one for this show. I'm really only going to hit on one specific point of focus that I feel is something we really need to wrap our heads around and take seriously as a collective. And that is the concept of doing for self. The concept of seeing these problems that other people are having and figuring out a way to manage these problems when they appear in our community. And this water crisis problem is not a when. It's already here and it's been here for a while now. If you look at what's happening all over America, our people might as well be in a permanent water crisis, because so many of us are drinking water that is literally poisonous. When you consider the contaminants and the contamination in the water, we're talking about water with lead levels that are higher than the Flint lead levels that created a national outcry. Environmental racism didn't start in Michigan, and it didn't end when the news stopped covering it. And you can bet that those that are going to be hit the hardest in South Africa are the black people. Not only because 80% of the country is black, but because most of the white people in South Africa live in a position where they have a modicum of wealth. Most of those people saying, "I'm just going to pay the fine," are white people. And I know white people in America are not white people in South Africa, but you can't tell me we don't see the exact same type of apathetic, nonchalant behavior here when it comes to things that other communities are facing. Now, I'm not on my whole rise up and blah, blah, blah kick, because that's not me personally. What I am on is what I've always been on, which is us doing for ourselves and taking care of ourselves so that our quality of life is not dependent on somebody else's tolerance to our existence. You see, not only should we be storing our own water, but we should be conducting our own research to figure out how to sanitize dirty water. And eventually we should be figuring out how to convert ocean water into drinking water. Distillation or desalinization? Anybody. And we know that there are already processes available to do this, but how many people in our community have the resources to create a large-scale plant for these purposes? How many people in our community know how to create devices powerful enough to provide water for themselves? And how many people in our community know how to do that even when the power goes out. And to take it one step further, how many people in our community understand how to do all those things and also understand the total global effect of potentially changing the ratio of fresh water to salt water on the globe? Because we don't want to get too far out of hand with this. Like this, we talk about survival skills on Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. He often, another show you can find right here on this network, he often talks about prepping and the need for prepping. Water is the key to every prepping guide, because without water, there is no preparation. There is no survival. And if you can't find something to drink that is not toxic, contaminated, or poisonous to you, then you might as well jump off a cliff, because you're as good as dead. So we really need to take these situations that are happening globally, as well as those things that are happening right here in the U.S., not only to ourselves in the isolated spots all over the globe or all over the nation, but to other people all over the nation. We need, or all over the globe. We need to take those situations, those incidents, and we need to figure out how we could prevent ourselves from getting into those problems. And in this case, since we're already in a water crisis, how we can get out of it before we've consumed so much toxic, contaminated, and poisonous water that we lose the ability to think on a high enough level to think our way out of these problems. And that's really all it is to it. That's my opinion. Go ahead and let me know if you agree. Let me know if you disagree. Tell me what you think. Let me know. I love comments. I love interactions. And we will see you next week on the next episode of Lessons.
Lessons from the screen. What we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons. Give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.